Welcome to St. Columba Anglican Church in Beaumont, Alberta. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Stephanie London. Today is December 11th, 2022. Our text for today, the third Sunday of Advent, comes from Matthew chapter 11, verses 2 to 11. Today, on this third Sunday in Advent, we reflect on joy. Not happiness, which is what you feel when you get the Christmas gift you wanted, or you get to sleep on freshly washed sheets, or you step outside and realize that someone has shoveled your sidewalk. Happiness is contingent on our circumstances, our own comfort and convenience. We don't light an Advent candle for happiness, but we do have one for joy. And as we do, we remember the words of an Old Testament prophet, Nehemiah. The joy of the Lord is my strength. Advent and Lent both have a Rose Sunday where something of the deep blue or purple is lightened from within, where even when the night is longest, God still shines. Here's a bit of trivia for you for this Rose Sunday, the third Sunday of Advent. This is from the American Ecclesiastical Review of 1910. It reads, "The expression in color of the sentiment of joyous hope during the penitential journey corresponds to a brightening or tempering of the somber purple so as to approach the color of the rose. Purple is produced by the combination of red and blue. The deeper and stronger the blue is in the mixture, the more somber and dark will be the purple. Whereas the more the clear red predominates, all the brighter and more festive will be the purple. But the red must not make it to resemble too closely the red used on feasts of martyrs, for it does not indicate martyrdom or sacrifice, but joy. Hence the tint to be chosen is a light, pale rose. Since white is the symbolic of color of joy in the liturgy, vegetable dyes such as archil and madder, subdued by a mixture of white, would give a natural and becoming rosaceum." So there you go, color theory in church. Today, this third Sunday of Advent, is a call to joy. We read again from the Old Testament prophet Isaiah this week, this beautiful vision of the joy that comes when God saves us. Isaiah writes, "Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the speechless sing for joy. For waters shall break forth from the wilderness and streams in the desert. The burning sand shall become a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water. The haunt of jackals shall become a swamp. The grass shall become reeds and rushes." God shows up, and geysers of living water break out of all the parched land, and life springs up joyfully out of the earth, out of our hearts. Behind these buoyant expressions of joy is God's healing, God's salvation. And once again, like in Isaiah 11, which we read last week, the force of this passage is in the shall. The burning sand shall become a pool. The lame shall leap like a deer. This God we worship is the one whose salvation and healing is ultimately guaranteed. The joy of the Lord is our strength. But not in the way we expect, and not in the time we expect. The great John the Baptist, the one Jesus called Elijah for announcing the Messiah, the one whose fiery voice lit the Jordan River with baptism after baptism, who called the people back to God, he was in prison, and it wasn't looking good. Here, even John's strong conviction is starting to waver. Where was God? Where were the purifying flames from heaven? Where were the clouds opening and God's angel armies descending in power? Not in this prison. So John sends his disciples to Jesus with a message. It's just a few words, but we can hear John's faith wavering. And he's starting to wonder if maybe he'd been wrong. Jesus answers with the same prophecy from Isaiah that we read today. "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the poor have good news brought to them." By quoting Isaiah, this is what Jesus is saying. You know what God looks like. You know how God moves, what God's footprints look like. So see, those footprints are everywhere. You can see, Jesus implies, that God is here in me. The Bible doesn't record what happens next for John. The Gospel of Matthew turns and follows Jesus as he goes, as he does those works that Isaiah promised. But I imagine that something of the joy of the Lord, the joy of seeing God's salvation, sparked alive in him. So that even as he sat in prison, as his voice shrank small beside the Messiah's, as Herod's servants came to execute him as the prize for a stupid waver, even though he never again felt the sun on his face, I bet John the Baptist praised God, like the followers of Jesus would later do in prison themselves. I bet John knew joy because he had seen God. It's an important truth for us who still live in the time before Isaiah's vision is fully realized. We're not there yet. But we can praise God way before we see it fulfilled. Even in the worst circumstances, the joy of the Lord is our strength. We can still praise God. Worship is our response to God's actions and God's character. It's the language of our relationship with God. Isaiah knew it. Chapter 35 is full of the language of praise. It's not because God is some kind of pompous egotist in the sky, and we reluctantly do it because God is sitting up there saying, "Praise me." As an aside, if you Google pompous, you get a bunch of pictures of a cat named Pompous Albert licking his lips and glaring at you, ready to pounce. God is not like that. God is not a grumpy cat waiting for you to feed him. That's just projecting human ideas onto God. We praise God because worship is the language of our relationship with God. And God is not somewhere up there, but with us. Worship is how we touch God's heart, and it's our quickest shortcut to joy. Through worship, when we praise God, in a sense, we stand face to face with God, and we know God's joy beaming at us, God's delight in us. And it doesn't matter whether we're struggling through a desert or staring at the inside of a prison. I think it's God's favorite place to be, with us. And for us, we learn that joy, like the peace we talked about last week, has power and substance. It rubs off on us. It moves in and fills us. And it shows us who God is. It builds our faith in what God can and will do. The joy of the Lord is our strength. Richard Foster, who wrote extensively on the Christ-centered life with God, calls this cultivating holy expectancy, the confidence that God will speak, that God will move, the excitement of what is God going to do next? Holy expectancy is rooted in the action of praise, of recognizing who God is and how God acts. Praise forms us and builds perspective in us. God cultivates joy in us as we spend time with God. Joy grows in us as we spend time with God. How? We call our church service worship, and it is. Music and prayers and community orients us to God, reminds us of who we are and who God is and what God is doing. It's important. But here on the third Sunday of Advent, we're being invited to something much more intimate, much more just your heart to God's. So find a couple of minutes this week to worship God, maybe when you open your eyes in the morning or when you're out shoveling your neighbor's snow. Take some time to cultivate the relationship with the one who loves us and created us. You might borrow some of the words we read this morning from Isaiah 35. You might spend a little time saying to God, "You are majestic, you are mighty, you are strong to save. You make the burning sand of the desert into a pool," whatever your words are to God. Try it and Let me know how it went. As we worship God, we pursue joy.